Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, just before we get into the show proper, just a few dates I've got to plug. So this Sunday, August 7th at the Belfry on Brunswick Street in Fitzroy, Good Intentions Comedy Room, the brand new room I'm running with Tommy Daslow, where we host, we try new material, we get our funny friends to jump up and do spots as well. So this weekend we have Kirsty Wiebeck, Duroc Jazz Singer, we have Jordan Barr and also Tim Hewitt, so it's going to be lots and lots of fun. So head over to joshua.com.au for the tickets while you're there. Also, at the Belfry, 2 weeks after, exactly, at 3 p.m, the 21st is a live Don't You Know Who I Am. Hey, if only ever just discovered this podcast, I had another one that I did 300 episodes of called Don't You Know Who I Am. The live shows are going monthly now at the Belfry, the home of my career, pretty much. So that's going to be lots and lots of fun. Always great guests. So get a ticket. Tickets are cheaper if you're a Patreon subscriber as well. So if you want to help out the podcast by becoming a Patreon subscriber, go to patreon.com/dykwia. That's patreon.com/dykwia. You get, if you're not from Melbourne, you get the live episodes of the podcast, Don't You Know Who I Am, that go up there. The only place you can get them. Also, you get podcast called Top 5, which I do with a buddy. I sit down and we discuss the top 5 of a topic of our choice. Tim Hewitt, who's on the show on Sunday, he came on last week. We did Top 5 TV Dads. Super fun, super dumb. Thanks everyone who's been giving 5-star reviews of the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you can review the podcast. That means a lot. Leaving messages, that's always great. Don't forget to like, subscribe, do all those things. Get the word out there. Thank you very much. Anyway, enough from me. Enjoy this episode with... Oh, podcast royalty. It's Will Anderson, everyone. Hello and welcome to 100% Hits Volume Pod, the podcast that looks at the greatest musical compilation this country's ever produced. My name is Josh Earl, and joining me this week, very special guest. Please welcome into your ears, it's Will Anderson, everyone. Yay!
I mean, having me on a podcast doesn't qualify as a very special guest, Josh. Like, come on. Like, these days you're prouder if you're like 100% Will Anderson free. That's like, some podcasts are actually leaning into that so that if you hate me, you can't just stumble onto me on one of your favourite other podcasts.
So how many podcasts you got? You got Tofop, you got Fofop, you got Two Guys, One Cup.
Yeah.
Willosophy.
Well, Willosophy's on hiatus. There's been no new Willosophy this year. I mean, people still listen to it. You know what I love about Willosophy is it's still making the top 150 podcasts in Australia. I have not done a new episode this year, but the back catalogue is still getting some listens. So I feel like that project is just doing its job on its own without any supervision from me. You know, I'm just like, if you love something, set it free. If it loves you, it'll come back to you.
Hey, I'm a big proponent of ending a podcast.
I mean, Josh, you are an industry leader. That's what you are. You're a man who, like, because this is the thing, like, the great advantage of podcasting when you first started, you were like, oh, it's a radio show that you can't get sacked from. That's a cool thing. But then you realize that is as much a blessing as it is a curse, because it's also a job that no one will ever tell you to stop doing.
Yeah.
You are the only person that will decide whether you should stop doing it or not. So, yeah, there was something quite liberating about the fact that I haven't had the time and space and energy, and there's a whole bunch of other reasons I haven't done Willosophy this year. But this idea that you could actually say no to yourself, you're like, oh, I've set a boundary for myself here.
Hey, what we're going to do today, we're going to talk about Volume 7, Side A. So it came out in 93, Will. What was happening in Will Anderson's world in 93?
Well, I would have been, if I've got my maths correct, 19 years old, which means that I was second year university. So I would have been at the University of Canberra. I would have moved out into a share house for the first time. I lived on campus for the first year. And my musical tastes would have been going very much from, see, the compilation albums of my generation are more you like choose 1985, you know, like yep. these are the things that are iconic in my memory of when like a compilation would have been something that I enjoyed. I went to university in Canberra, first week, O week, got invited down to Mikey Robbins and Helen Razor were doing the Triple J Breakfast Show live from the Uni of Canberra bar yep. for O week, you know, back when universities had money to spend on things like getting Triple J Breakfast Show to the campus. But I always say the most influential thing that happened in my entire 3 years of my education at that university. Like I did a journalism degree, graduated first in my class, worked as a journalist. Like, but the thing that actually affected my life was in O week, me getting up before like 6 o'clock in the morning to go and see that guy I knew from the TV, Mikey Robbins, because I'd never heard Triple J before. Because I grew up in the yep. country, we didn't have Triple J down where we had 1242 3TR, Sound of Gippsland in the Valley. G'day. If you answer your phone and say, g'day, I listen to Mummery in the morning, you might win $12.42, Josh. That is the radio that I was raised on. So I've gone to university. The first time I have ever heard Triple J was the Triple J Breakfast Show. Like live, I was there yep. in the audio, and so I wasn't even listening to it on the radio. And of course, I went on to have like, can you imagine if you told that kid sitting in O week at university in Canberra, he goes, "Oh, you know what you're watching right now? That will be your job in 7 years from now." Then, like, it just would have blown my mind. But the most influential thing that happened in my career happened in the first week of O week. I probably could have just fucked off after then, and I would have been fine. But yeah.
Because didn't Adam Spencer also get into Triple J from a university? They did a live broadcast from a uni and he got up and did some maths and that he was quite funny.
I believe so. I believe they were doing a university live show and he went up and did like they used to do lists between the weather, which was the bane yep. of my existence when I was doing that show, because that was my responsibility to come up with like three or four jokes, you know, for a topic between every weather.
Yeah,
but the truth of it is, it was a good way to recruit people to that show because Adam did that, and I think actually, when Helen and Mikey used to have me on regularly on their show, I think that I used to do lists in the weather. So that was the main. If you're looking for that golden, you know, Malcolm Gladwell, you know, point where what was it that got you this job? The real thing was your capacity to say a couple of funny things between a weather list.
All right, all those people listening, if you want a job on Triple J, just go to all the unis when they do live broadcasts, if they still do them. I don't even know. All right, let's get into these songs. So the first song. Now, normally on these compilations, they start off sexy. They start off horny. Yeah. We've had people are still having sex. We've had Good Vibrations. We've had Let's Talk About Sex. Then I think they've realized, families are buying these albums now. We can't uh-huh. be as horny as we wanted to. So now they're starting this off track one, side A, volume 7, with Charles and Eddie's Would I Lie to You? Here it is. It has real Sonia Dada, Chaka Demus vibes, this one. I think we can stop it there.
There was a point where you thought that falsetto couldn't get any higher, and then either Charles or Eddie, I'm not sure which one's which, has come in with like whatever you can do. I will tell you, I am not left-handed. Here we go.
I cannot wait until I get the calls from people who have been listening to this at like 1.3 or 1.4 speed, just going, I just couldn't listen to the Charles and Eddie song. It just went too high. My dogs are in the background going crazy.
Well, I would say that they are a transition between normal music and the Chipmunks albums. So yeah. if you're looking for a middle ground, these are your dudes. Now, you worked on the Australian version of Would I Lie to You, right, didn't you?
I did. I was one of the writers on it, yep.
Yeah. So is it, because Spicks and Specks, of course, like yep. is named after a song. That, you know, that obviously that show is named after a song. Yes, is Would I Lie to You named after the Charles and Eddie hit, do you think?
I don't know, because this is the thing. They're an American band, but quite big in UK. They won three Ivor Novello Awards in 92 or 93 for Best Contemporary Song, Best Selling Song, and International Hit of the Year. So obviously this was a big song in the UK. So maybe it was just named after this, but they didn't use the song for the intro.
No. Do you think Charles and Eddie are very mad about that? Like, because well, it's been a while between...
There's only one of them still alive. So so Eddie could be mad about it. Charles unfortunately died in 2001.
Rest in peace.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if he did die. He strikes me as a guy who's protesting too much about lying.
Yeah.
This is the thing. Like, if you've written a whole song to convince a woman that you're not going to lie to her, then that is a red flag for me that you are absolutely 100% lying to her. That is like, you know when they say if the lie has too much detail, it's probably a lie?
Yeah.
I feel like that if you've got your mate Eddie and you've gone into the studio, you've recorded a track all about it, then... I would say Charles doth protest too much.
Well, I didn't know this. Charles Pettigrew and Eddie Chacon. So they could have been Pettigrew and Chacon, but they went with Charles and Eddie. He was a member of the Tom Tom Club, which was like the Talking Heads kind of side project. Chris France and Tina Weymouth, their little band. It was quite a big band, but yeah.
I don't remember a lot about this song, but I do remember the film clip. And this is the one thing I remember because it was two of them, like, well, obviously, and they were like, but it was a lot of them hanging out on like in various locations, sort of just like singing and crooning and like doing their thing. But then they had that, like there was that weird sort of, you know, like when it looks like someone's drawn on the, like the footage or whatever it is, where it just like, he's a bit modern.
Yeah.
And it was just really out of place for the rest of the film clip. That's my one memory was... Like, it wasn't a film clip that was anyway set in the modern world or, like, trying to be futuristic, but just in between them, like, singing on a stoop to some girl about whether they'd never lie to them. It, like, there would just be these really futuristic, like, somebody just worked out how to do that on, like, the video editing technique.
Yeah, it's like the Star Wars wipes. Yeah, here we go. We've figured out a cool thing. It does give me... This song gives me real... Rob Mills would have sung it on Australian Idol in a later round if he got through. That's this song.
Yeah, I think so. And I think very much it would have worked for a Rob Mills in that context because I think this song does have subtext. Like, I do think this song is about this guy, like, being a bit of a player and saying, hey, would I lie to you, baby? Come on, you're the only one for me. And I don't feel like if you just read it on what they think it is on the top level, that it is just this song of commitment. I mean, firstly, if you're that committed, you don't need your buddy to be there for the, right, you mean? Like if you really, like the fact that there's two of you already, or were Charles and Eddie part of one of the original polyamorous relationships? And it's the idea that like Charles and Eddie are both singing.
Me and my friend Charles saw you across the bar. We wondered if we'd like to buy you a drink.
Dig your vibe.
Nice. All right, we're going to move on. Now this, I'm sure in 93 at uni, this would have been played a lot at the, was it Canberra Uni or?
University of Canberra bar, University of Canberra.
Yep. This is Arrested Development and they're huge, huge hit. People love that.
Treble tone. They weren't in a hurry, were they?
It's so slow, isn't it? Hip hop in the 90s was so slow. So this is the one you can listen on 1.4 speed. Oh, actually, this is good. Maybe she was demonstrating, but nevertheless, I was pleased. My day was going great, and my soul was at ease until a group of brothers started bugging out, drinking the 40 ounce, going the nigga route, disrespecting my black queen, holding the cross. We'll stop it there.
Yeah, let's stop it before it gets to the one bit of this song that is memorable. Because the hook of this is a great example of the hook doing so much heavy lifting that we forget that the rest of it was, at best, pedestrian-sounding rap. Like,
it not only was a pedestrian, it's also, it hasn't aged well. It's almost, for those who didn't go back and listen to the lyrics properly, it's Speech, who's the lead singer of this band, almost kind of like doing a bit of a Bill Cosby in terms of pull your pants up, men, like show some respect, stop being on the corners, stop getting off the streets, go inside. And it's a bit like, oh, I don't know. I feel uncomfortable listening to that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, Cosby has really ruined a lot of things.
Yeah.
But one of them is like, you know, being able to judge other people in your own community by impossible standards. He's really ruined that. But I agree. I think that, I mean, obviously Arrested Development, I really loved Arrested Development at the time, and I still have quite a deal of affection for this. And so I went back and watched the film clip for this, like knowing that we were going to talk about it. And again, was surprised at how pedestrian the rap is. Like, it's just, like, I was like, okay, so just one draft? Was that the idea with the song? You were just like, the hook's so good, we only need one draft of the raps? Like,
yeah, the storyline of it is the type of song where I think someone like a Tucker Carlson on Fox News would go, see, I told you, see, even their own community. I'm like, no, you don't want something like that on your side.
Yeah. Speech should have done a little less speaking and a little more rewriting would have been my tip for this one. But also, that was their vibe. They were trying to be, like, I mean, there had been this, like, real rise in, because I loved 80s and early 90s hip-hop is probably my favourite era of any music, right? Yeah. And so I kind of followed the, like, the infighting of the community or the, like, the sort of battles over this. And so I loved the vibe of what Arrested Development were trying to do. But watching it back, you're like, oh, calm down, Hillsong. Like, I mean, like, just, you know.
I should mention, so the sample is Sly and the Family Stone's Everyday People. They've changed it to People Every Day. Very, very clever. No one ever,
good like, stuff.
Uncracked that code. But I remember seeing Sly and the Family Stone at Harvest Festival, which was a festival in Werribee, which had so many issues with people just trying to leave the festival. Like, they kind of said, oh, because it's a Sunday, the trains won't be running, so everyone drive. And then Metro were like, oh, no, we'll run extra trains. You just got to let us know. And so then on the morning of, they're like, all right, the train's running. No one drive. Everyone get the train. Everyone was like, we've already made plans. And so I remember being in a car with Tommy Daslow, Xavier Michaelides and Carl Chandler for 3 hours trying to get out of the car park. It was a great 3 hours. But yeah. But Sly and the Family Stone played, and they played their song, Everyday People. And I would say 80% of the audience thought it was Arrested Development. Going, oh, cool. This is great. They're playing their big hit. It was good. It was good. All right, moving on. We talked about this woman last episode with Ben Lomas. He mentioned her vocals sound crisp. We talked about The Day You Went Away last time. Today we're talking about her follow-up single, Friday's Child by Wendy Matthews.
Yep, that's enough.
You don't like this one?
This Come is on, sudden... Such a great example of how popular the previous song was that this has made the album. I think a lot of this CD is a lot of,
all right, we got your big hit last time or the song before. We have to do this one.
I mean, it feels like it might be going somewhere here. Like, at that point, you're like, no, I do not. this is like when I watch Shaun of the Dead and I turn it off before his mum dies. Like, sometimes you just want a happy ending. You don't want to see the bad bits. And I like Wendy Matthews. I think she's super talented, clearly.
Yeah.
But this song does not go anywhere.
I was on a short flight and watched Straight Outta Compton, only the first hour. I'm going, oh, this is great. A bunch of friends getting really big.
Great
story. Don't need to watch anymore. Don't need to see Eazy-E coughed. It's nothing. Yeah. Who cares?
I assume it all works out fine.
Yeah. Hey, this was a single, and on the single was her own song, The Day You Went Away, but sung in French. Do you want to hear a bit?
Yeah.
This is the last bit. So the song, The Day You Went Away, as we uncovered last week, is a cover. But this is the French version, and if you ever wanted to hear what Sleeping Bag is in French, here we go. On bosse en avion, il s'est éloigné. Avec ses provisions, ils sont levés. That's it. Sauvet, that's Sleepy Bag in French. If you ever go camping, you need to know. There you go.
So did Wendy Matthews, like, already speak French? Did she learn French?
Well, she's
French?
Canadian, so I'd say she did speak French.
French-Canadian, yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. But Friday's Child, obviously in reference to the poem, Monday's Child is Fairer Face. But Friday's Child, I had to look this up, is Loving and Giving. If you're going to write a song about that poem, Wednesday's Child is the one to write a song about. Wednesday's Child is full of woe. As someone who's written songs, I would go, interesting child.
I would have said, I'm someone who hasn't written songs, but I know a good song when I hear it. I would have Craig David'd it. You've got to do Monday's Child, Tuesday. You've got to run it through the whole week.
No, he doesn't run through the whole week. He gets to Thursday and goes, on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, yeah, we were having sex as well. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, we can yada yada the weekend, children.
I am a Friday child. I was born on a Friday.
I have no idea what day I was born. Is that a thing that you're meant to know?
No, I looked it up, Will.
Oh, of course you did.
You were born on a Thursday.
Oh, What does that mean?
Thursday's child has far to go.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Saturday's child works hard for a living. And the child born on the Sabbath day is Bonnie and Blythe and Good and Gay. But what the website I looked up also that said what day it was also said that the number one song on the day you were born. And yours was Photograph by Ringo Starr. And mine was Betty Davis Eyes by Kim Carnes.
Okay.
I think my song's better.
I agree. Yeah. No debate. I cannot mount a case for the opposition.
All right. We'll move on. Look, as we both said, it's a follow-up single to a smash hit. It got to number 16, but it was in and out. Got in that week, left the top 50 the next week. All right. Now, this song by two-time Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Peter Gabriel and his song, Steam. This is a 6-minute song, Will.
But here's the thing. This is such a great example of... Because, I was going to forgive Charles and Eddie for their video editing techniques because I was like, maybe the technology, wasn't that good. They were working with the best they have. But then I rewatched the film clip for this last night because I remembered at the time I absolutely loved it. I loved what he was doing in the world of film clips. I mean, Sledgehammer is obviously the more famous one.
Yeah.
But Steam is incredible. It's like an AI was fed acid and came up with a video clip. It is compelling.
It is, if you haven't seen it, do watch it. But it's like they've put every single thing they can do in the 1 6-minute video. It's like someone say, hey, can you give us a sample of your work? And they've just done everything they can do. And they've gone, yeah, that's the film clip. We love it.
Right. We'll put your head on a muscly body. We'll take all your clothes off.
We'll have those swirly eyes going around.
You'll be a cartoon.
Yeah. You'll transform from a woman's body to your face. Yeah.
But it's funny. It's actually really funny and it's so well done. If you saw that today, because it's got actually quite a modern, it reminds me of what that style of stuff has actually become where people have returned to it, looking a bit sort of put together or not making sense in a chronological story way, but still making sense internally in this universe that is just spinning from one idea to the next. It worked for me. It's bonkers. Like, it's bananas. Like, and every time you think it's done, something else happens and you go, what is going on? And then when you hear the song without the film clip, you realize it's a fine song.
Yeah.
Like, it, you know, it's absolutely fine. But it's like the song was written for the video clip. If you watch them both together, it's actually a real experience and you think, this is a fucking great song.
Yeah, there's
and
a few songs like that where you hear the song, then you see the film clip, and then you can't think of the song without thinking of the film clip anymore.
Yeah.
Like Praise You by Fatboy Slim's an example where you go, oh yeah, that's the Spike Jonze dancing in the mall kind of thing. But when I first heard, I'd never heard this song before, I don't think. I'd seen the film clip, I think, in when they have like wrap-ups of the best film clips of all time, but you're kind of watching, you don't really listen to the song. But the song, it sounds so much like Sledgehammer.
Yeah.
Which was his huge hit.
Almost exactly the same. In fact, the music is pretty much exactly the same.
Well, doing research, it was a real fuck you to the critics who was like, oh, like his stuff just sounds the same. So it's like, oh, you think it all sounds the same? Well, I'll show you. I'll write another song that sounds the same. And guess what? The audiences didn't give a shit. They were like, cool, we love that song. We love this song.
Yeah, we love that original one. Why would you fuck with the original formula? That's exactly what we wanted.
Which was my thing with, I'm a big fan of The Strokes and love their first album, love their second album, but the second album got all this kind of like reviews. Oh, it just sounds like the first one. I'm like, the first one was great.
That's what I wanted. Oh, one of my favorite things is when a rapper, like Kendrick does this quite a lot, there's like three different versions of this. Like you're like, I love this track. And then he's gone away and got like a Jay-Z's on this one and he's doing a verse and Kendrick's written a new verse. I'm like, I don't need to hear a new song. I like this song that I already like with new lyrics and a guest. This is even better.
Well, artists like painters get to do that. They get to do a whole series. Like who's the guy who did all the Ned Kelly artwork?
Right.
I forget his name. Yeah, that's it. Sidney Nolan. Like just for years, just did the same picture over and over again. Band should do that. Just go, all right.
I mean, Peter Gabriel also, just to be reminded of that era, and I know we're not beyond it, like where a middle-aged man can still be a rock star and a pop star. Like you still got your Pit Bulls and these sort of people that feel like, but Peter Gabriel is really like part of the fact that he was, you know, obviously lent so much into the film clips and, you know, like this surreal world was that he was just like a middle-aged man who was like a pop star and he was like, I've got to do something to throw people off the scent here.
Well, for those, so he was a founding member of Genesis.
Yes.
And then he left Genesis. And I did like this. So they were a band for a while, like 4 or 5 years, not doing much. And then one gig, he was a bit bored. He thought, I know what I'll do. I'll go off and I'll get on a really stupid costume and just come out. But he didn't tell the band he was going to do it because they thought, he thought they might say, no, don't do that. Yeah. Don't take away from the music. Anyway, he did that. It got the picture on the front page of the Melody Maker, which was the big kind of UK magazine kind of thing. And they got to raise their fee up because of that, because they were like, as seen on the front cover of Melody Maker. And so people would go along and go, I want to see the fuck thing that Peter Gabriel is going to wear. It's great. Phil Collins did not take up the wearing stupid stuff when he became the front man.
I'm not sure that is correct because I've spoken on Tofop about one of my favorite like YouTube videos of all time. And I'll be quick on this, but there is a clip of him doing In the Air Tonight at a concert where he's like, you know, already a very much an older man and he's in sort of like what I can only imagine are like Japanese silk pajamas or something like that.
Nice.
And he's got like a Madonna-style headset mic and a set that looks like Australian Ninja Warrior. Like it's amazing. And he does this thing where he sings In the Air Tonight and then he goes right around like this giant set and then he walks up to where he sits down and they lower a drum kit from the fucking roof and then he just does the drum solo from the song. I have watched that video clip, I would say, I reckon 20 times. And the thing that I love the most about it is the audience in that room that night when he does that, no one has ever had a better time than they were having in that moment. None of them saw it coming and they all loved it. 10,000 people at once just went, you are the greatest rock star of all time. Thank you very much.
It's so fun. I don't know if this is just like kind of it's been built up over the years, but apparently when Peter Gabriel left Genesis, they auditioned 700 other singers before they just went, Phil Collins, who's already on drums, now you can do it.
Like, now we have Now we have to get another drummer, though, you know?
Sure. Yeah, drummers are harder to get than singers. This is the other thing I like. So also, Peter Gabriel, hugely charitable. He started WOMAD.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, not just him, but he was one of the co-founders of it. And so in this country, we have WOM Adelaide, World Music. And also in Adelaide, it's also the Michael Franti experience. He's there every year. But in 2008, he released an album called Scratch My Back, which is him doing covers of songs. So he did David Bowie, Lou Reed, Arcade Fire, Regina Spektor, The Magnetic Fields, and Radiohead. And the idea, it was called Scratch My Back, and the idea was he was going to do the covers of these people, and then the bands were going to do a cover of his songs, and then some of them went, nah, I don't want to do that. And so he never released, because it was going to be called Scratch My Back, and the other one was going to be called And I'll Scratch Yours.
I mean, I like that. I've got to be honest with you. But he seems like a creative guy, is what I would say. And yeah. Listening to that, like watching that film clip and listening to that song again last night, I was like, I reckon that Peter Gabriel still stands up. Like, I feel like this is still good music.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's 1993 music.
No. If somebody released it, if you heard it on Triple J now, like with a few tweaks, you'd be like, oh yeah, I could see this. Like, yeah. I could hear that fitting in.
Yeah. It's Peter Gabriel, Huey Lewis. It's got a Huey Lewis vibe. You could have told me this was a Huey Lewis song. I would have known.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
All right, moving on. Another band who's been discussed before, this is the Screaming Jets. Now, last time we discussed Living in London, is that what it's called? It's a great song. This one is their cover of the Roland S. Howard song, Shivers.
I've been contemplating suicide, but it really doesn't suit my style, so I think I'll just act bored instead, to contain the blood I could have shed. She makes me feel so weary, my heart is really on its knees, but I keep a poker face so well that even my
I don't know is the answer, Josh. I don't know. It's such a great song.
It is that, a very well-written song.
That hearing the song itself is like enough to almost get me across the line to say it's because it's a good, it's just a great song.
Yeah.
And like it would be hard to fuck up that song, you know?
Very hard because it's only G and C. Even musically, it's a very simple song.
Yeah, it feels like something that if I was ever to have to do a live performance where I sang, it might be what I busted out because I feel like that is a range that I could control and like make work. When it comes to covers, okay, here's what my pros are for this. I don't think there was a lot of people who were familiar with this song. Like this is not, when you think about covering a song, like, you know, and the Screaming Jets at the time, clearly, you know, let's put a cover on. Like, you know, I mean, we see this so much, right? Like, you know, that follow-up single or that, you know, being like a cover in this era. the fact that they chose this song, I think, means they have good taste,
yes.
Right? Like, it's not an obvious choice of a song to do as a cover.
That's my theory of bands who I don't think are, like, not my favourite bands, but if they will program Rage, if they're not a cool band, they'll program a lot of really cool songs. And I'll go, oh, this is great. And then if they are a very cool band, they'll program a lot of bullshit because they're just too cool. Like, it's just that thing.
Yeah. I think that the Screaming Jets would program a good Rage. I agree, yeah. Josh. If this song meant that people went and found the original, then I think, like, it did its job.
Yeah.
But, you know, it doesn't add much to, it doesn't add anything.
Yeah.
it shaves off some edges of the original, right? But, like, it's fine. It's a fine version of this song that got it out to a much wider audience.
Yeah. So Roland S. Howard wrote this when he was 16, and he said he wrote it almost as a comic song. Like, and if you just listen to the lyrics at the very start, like, yeah. it's
line, second line, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But it really doesn't suit my style.
It's not really my style. Yeah. I'll just look bored instead. But he said that when Nick Cave sung it, he kind of made it more menacing. And so people just thought it was, like, very heartfelt, which it is. But he also, Roland S. Howard was like going, it was a bit of an albatross around his neck. So I watched an interview with him on Studio 22, which is an old ABC show they used to film, just to have bands come in and just play a set and do an interview. And he said that, like, people, it's the most requested song. And because he wrote it when he was 16, he doesn't feel like it's his song. He's just kind of like, it's someone else wrote it and he'll do it. But he wasn't like saying, I don't want to play the song anymore. He's just saying, I just don't feel anything when I play it. It's just that thing. I once met Roland S. Howard in 2005. He was at Trades Hall Bar. So I was doing my show on the Comedy Festival that year, and that was the year that it was before the Comedy Festival took over Trades Hall, and Keating, the musical, was on after me in the same venue, and that was super, super popular. And so they'd be very busy in the bar, and then everyone would go in and watch the show, and then I pretty much had the bar to myself. And Roland S. Howard was drinking at the bar because his partner at the time was working behind the bar there, and I didn't know. And I'd been there like every night at the bar after my show, talking to her because she was cool, and then her partner was in that night, and I didn't realize it was Roland S. Howard until about 5 minutes into talking with them. Like, kind of said, "Oh, this is my partner Roland," and he had hepatitis C. He was very, very ill looking, and it was a little bit sad, but like, he was very, very nice and easy talk. Like, you know, I always think that Nick Cave would be like this kind of like weird kind of guy to talk to, and then you realize, oh no, he's just a guy from Melbourne. Like, right. He's just a kid from Geelong. Like, it's... Yeah, I could talk to him.
Who does a performance.
Yes.
You know, it is that thing where sometimes you're like, yeah, no, they're just pretending. Like, it's not... It's just the thing they do. They just put on their, like... You know, like, it's like, say, it's kind of like that thing of going, oh, yeah, it'd be nice to meet Chris Hemsworth, but is he always going to be banging on about Asgard? And what if haven't seen the films? I don't know. Like, I mean, of course...
All right, moving on. Now, long-time listeners will know, I'm only allowed to dislike one song per album, and this.
You're only allowed to dislike one per album?
One per episode.
Okay.
So this is the song that I've chosen. Not my cup of tea. This is AOT and the Lost Civilization, and their song, Tequila.
Oh, yeah. You'll hear me. You ready?
Was at the bar with my drinking team, and it was me, Jack Daniels, and my homie Jim Beam. We were kind of blitzed and we were trying to behave, yo. When in walked a soldier, he was from the fuzzy naval. We were falling, stumbling, crawling. Here came the police, Captain Tom Collins, and the vital said freeze. He said hands in the air and hand over your keys. Now we did, and that was kind of simple. Now here came Margarita and her friend Shirley Temple. I asked my friend about Margarita. He said that Shirley was a virgin and I wouldn't want to meet her. So I talked to Margarita because, yo, she was flyer. I took her to the coast because I wanted to screwdrive her. Now, I'm not one for a speech, but there was plenty of tequila and sex on the beach, y'all. Tequila. Tequila.
See, Josh, the lyrics, the names yes, of people Will. Are also the names of popular alcohol brands, you see.
Oh, what? He's so clever.
He's got a friend called Jim Beam and Jack Daniels, and then this girl Margarita's rocked up with Shirley Temple. And guess what Shirley Temple is? She's a virgin because Shirley Temple's don't have alcohol in them. I don't think you've realised how clever this song is, Josh. That's why you don't like it. Or is it too clever? As someone who writes comedy songs, has Alt and the Lost Civilization taken it to a Bo Burnham level that you can't aspire to? Is that what's happening here?
I'll tell you what. I know exactly what this songwriter's done. He's gone, oh, that's fun for the first line. Oh, shit.
Let's do it for the whole song.
I've got to do it for the whole song. I counted them. There's 36 different drinks in here. And by the end, you're like, nah. Like the fuzzy navel, like the Tom Collins. It's like, it's too much. It's too much. Alvin Trevett, that's his real name. Alvin Lau Trevett is ALT.
Now, he was a I believe he was Mexican though, right? Like, was he a or Hispanic rapper of some kind? I remember that. And here's what I will argue is like, yes, clearly this is a terrible song. And like the hook is so ubiquitous these days that like even if you had enjoyed it in the first place, you couldn't still enjoy it, right? But the rapping in this is actually technically better than the rapping in the rest of the development track, right? Like,
yes,
like,
absolutely.
At least he tells a story. Like you get these various scenes and scenarios, parties and whatever that he rolls up to, and then he has coincidentally 80 friends who all have alcohol like names. But like at least you can see what he's doing. And the hook is like a party hook. You know, you got that Mexican vibe to it. Like if he's representing, like I don't know culturally whether this style of music, it does feel a bit like that celebratory, you know, style of music that you associate with traditional Mexican music, at least when you see it represented through Western things. So there are bits of this that I go, yeah, okay, that all kind of makes sense. I can see why this is a thing. It's not my cup of tea either.
Yeah.
But I like it's. I actually think there's something going on, right?
Yeah. Look, it's not. When I say I dislike it, it's not like a dislike I had for like the Red Hot Chili Peppers or the Teen Queens. It's just of all the songs on this side, it is my least favorite song. Now, so this is another cover as well. I mean, it's not a cover. They've sampled Tequila, which is a song by The Champs from 1958, not the Could Have Been Champions, The Champs, which has been used a lot. Most notably for me in the film Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, where the turtles changed tequila to, what do you think they changed it to, Will?
Tortilla?
No, ninjutsu.
Ninjutsu, is that really?
Yep. That is really what it is. But that's not the worst version of that. The worst version of this song, and possibly the unfunniest late night bit ever, was on Stephen Colbert, backed by dancers dressed as syringes and called The Vaccine, spelled S-C-E-N-E, The Vaccine, played this song, added no words, no lyrics, but instead of saying tequila, said vaccine for almost 2 minutes. I don't know what was going on in the Colbert world there, but he didn't seem happy, and it was just, all right, we've got to do a show every night during a pandemic. Fuck it, let's put it on. Like, yeah, all right. It's the worst. I'll link it in the show notes. It's incredible how bad it is.
See, this is a great example of how even people who you think have perfect lives had low points during the pandemic.
Yes.
You know? Like, we all had our rock bottom. Some people joined QAnon. Stephen Colbert just repeated tequila. Oh, sorry, vaccine over and over to the tequila song.
Now, I've been in many a writing room.
Yeah.
I don't know how that got pitched. The person who pitched it.
Oh, well, what about if we just like replace the word, we do the bare minimum. We just play the most annoying song in the world and we replace tequila with vaccine. What about that? Actually, you know what? Maybe that is funny. Is that funny? Yeah, actually,
no,
you know what?
We'll find
actually,
out
maybe
it wasn't.
That is funny. Well, it turns out, in retrospect.
All right, moving on to when this came out, I was 12 years old and this song at the time on this album would have been my favorite song. This is House of Love by the Bad Boys of the UK boy band scene, E17.
Everybody in the house of love.
has a bit of a Utah Saints feel to it.
Mate.
Not too bad. It's aged pretty well.
It is aged well, pretty, like, lyrically as well. I know these groups are targeted at these groups are targeted normally at like sort of teenage girls, right?
Yeah.
Like, and this band was definitely made up of like guys that would appeal to teenage girls, but I imagine the amount of sexual awakenings that teenage boys had, because there is a real like gay male lens on their film clips. They feel very yes. much like if you were. Like, if you were at a gay club and that was the video that was playing on the screen, you'd be like, yeah, this is designed yeah. for this audience. And I didn't really remember them like that. I went back and watched this and I was like, this is very, like, and it's very much about, like, don't judge people by their sex and sexuality and race. And, yep. like, I mean, the messaging in it is really positive world messaging. I mean, one love, one God. I didn't know if that was, like, there's one God and we mean one yep. and all the other gods are wrong. Or whether it meant, no, like, don't, you know, it doesn't matter what the name of your God is. There's only sort of yeah. like, you know, love is God. And it felt to me like, I'm like, this is, but I did look at the film clip and think, are these boys okay? Is someone, they felt like they needed a feed and maybe like a little bit of love. Like, yeah. that's what it looked like. They looked a little malnourished.
One guy in the band, very, very yeah. skinny. Yeah. So they were put together by the Pet Shop Boys manager. Who wanted,
oh, yeah, that makes sense.
He wanted a tougher version of Take That. So take okay. that Rawdia thing. Yeah. He was like, no, let's get a more...
Take this.
Yes, that's what it should have been called. But it's funny you mentioned the film, because I remember the film clip, loving the film clip.
Yeah.
And not just the song, but also the style. And off the back of this song, I remember buying a pork pie hat.
Yeah.
I bought a pork pie hat.
And going everywhere shirtless.
I had a mesh singlet. No.
A mesh singlet and a giant fluffy overcoat.
But I remember, I don't know if what you were like as a kid, but I remember being super, super anxious anytime I wore anything new out. If I knew, had new shoes, I was anxious that people would like say, oh, you got new shoes, and then like do the whole christening thing, stand on my feet. For this one, I was like super anxious. I wore it one time. So in Burnie, where I grew up, Tuesday night is the men's basketball, and we would go there every single Tuesday night, watch the women's play and then the men play. And I wore it there. And super conscious about it, going, no, I've got to wear it sometime. I bought this hat, I've got to wear it. And my friend Nigel White, I sat down next to me and he took it off my head and frisbeed it across the court. And the umpire picked it up and then chucked it to the bench.
Yeah.
And so for me, in order to get it, I had to walk around the entire court and go get it. And I was too embarrassed. And so I waited until the very end of the game to go and get my hat.
Well, you know what those guys need?
I never
wore
it again.
Those guys need to be invited into the house of love. And remember, there's just like one love and one God. And you shouldn't judge people by the clothes they wear or the sexuality they have.
E17 are still a band.
E17 are still, hang on, all of them? All original members?
Only one member. But also, I didn't know this. So Brian Harvey, who was a member, he was the best singer of the band.
Uh-huh.
He was kicked out of the band in 97 because in an interview he had talked about, I've taken ecstasy. It's great. It's cool to take drugs. And it makes you a better person. And the band kicked him out because it was a huge story. It even made it to the House of Commons where they talked about it. They talked about the ecstasy pandemic and they need to do something about it when even E17 are talking about how cool it is.
The House of Commons need to take some ecstasy and turn it into a house of love. That's what I'm hearing. I mean, surely... Like, if you're talking about houses of love, ecstasy is, like, you know, the main ingredient of a house of love. I mean, maybe they're talking, like, you know, the house of love is fine on the weekend, but, you know, it becomes the house of hate on a Tuesday. Suddenly they're sitting in the corner listening to the Screaming Jets, not understanding the irony in the song.
The only original member is Terry, Terry Caldwell.
Is he the rapper?
He's the one who does the dumb dance, and it says Terry's good at dancing, bad at singing in the film clip. He's the only member that's still in the group. But they now dress like they're in the Peaky Blinders. That's the thing. Yeah.
That makes sense.
All right, moving on. Now this one, look, this song was originally released in 85, but then in 1993 they did a remix, and this made it to this. This is The Cult with She Sells Sanctuary. MCMXCIII remix. Great song, actually.
I think it's one of the all-time great songs. This is one of those songs that every time it comes on something that I'm listening to, it's particularly a Turn It Up in the Car song. I went and saw The Cult live whenever they last toured Australia.
Yep.
It was still great. His voice isn't what it was, but it was still really great. And that song is... it's one of the all-time great rock songs, in my opinion. I just think it holds up still, too. It's the guitar stuff is iconic, but the singing is really fantastic. This is how good that song is that I think I loved that song and would have said it was one of my favourite songs from the moment that it was released, still through to today. If you were just what's a song that you'll never get sick of hearing? That is one of those songs. And I'm still not sure of what all the lyrics are. There's still a lot of them in the car where I'm and then just try to really just catch up again on the words that I do know.
Well, I was trying to figure out why it made it to this compilation.
Yeah.
It's it's an 8-year-old song, but this is a remix. And I was thinking, why did they do a remix? But then I realized, so this is a remix by Butch Vig, who had just come off doing Nevermind. And I would say had just been given, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
You've just produced the biggest album in the world. What do you want to do now, Butch?
Yeah.
And
there's this band that, there's this song that I really like by this underrated band. I'm just going to sprinkle a little Butch Vig on it and get them back in the charts. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good work.
Great.
That's great, Butch. Yeah.
Also, Ian Astbury, the singer of The Cult, he is a huge fan of the band The Doors, and he said he discovered them for himself when he was watching Apocalypse Now, and they play The End by The Doors near the end, and he just became obsessed. And like you with your going to O Week Triple J and then being on Triple J, he then became the singer of The Doors tribute act Riders of the Storm, which has two original Doors members in it, Ray Manzarek and Robbie Krieger.
Wow.
That would be a cool thing as a singer going, oh, I love this band and now I'm the lead singer of this band.
I mean,
so
that's
not only
great.
Was he The Doors, he also, for a short while, was the standing front man for the MC5 on their reunion.
So
he's been the lead singer of a few good bands.
I mean, it's kind of like you think about that with Adam Lambert as well, right? Which is you're the lead singer of Queen now, and for ages you've been the lead singer of Queen, and you get to go around the world and play Queen-sized concerts as the lead singer of Queen. That's better than having your own band and your own career, because your career is never going to be as big as Queen's career.
No.
If you're an aspiring singer, what you've got to do is identify a group you think wants to stick around who's got a sickly singer and, target them. You've just got to, start hanging around with the group, like going, I don't know what's going on, you know, like maybe even indulging some of the worst impulses of the lead singer, you know. You know what? Yeah, I know a guy who can get you heroin. Of course I do. Anyway, I'll go and...
So you're saying Phil Collins was probably saying to Peter Gabriel, no, yeah. get the weird suit on. Get the dress on, man. Yeah. Get the lobster
Absolutely.
Head on.
Absolutely. The guys will love it.
All right, this is our last song.
Okay, great.
Last song, side B. This is a little band called U2, and their song, Who's Gonna Ride Your Wild Horses? Now, this is the Temple Bar remix, which was the single which was on this compilation. So here we go.
You're dangerous, 'cause you're honest. You're dangerous, you don't know what you want.
We know where it goes.
Yeah.
Big old chorus.
Here's what I'm going to say. I quite like U2, and I have an affection for U2 from my youth. I went and saw them on that most recent world tour they did with that incredible, like you know, stage and screen. And
yep.
It was great. This is a real go-to-the-toilet-get-your-beer sort of song when they roll out Who's Going to Ride Your Wild Horses. Like, I'm sorry, I am being honest, Bono, and that's because I'm dangerous. But this is, never has a song started with you're dangerous and then offered you absolutely no danger. Like, and also it's you two running out of relatable songs, like, as far as I'm concerned. It's like, Where the Streets Have No Name, oh, that's relatable. With or Without You, that's relatable. And it's like, Who's Going to Ride Your Wild Horses? I'm like, people don't have wild horses, like Bono. This is now unrelatable.
Well, this is the rumour what this song was written about. So Bono, very happily married, has been for a long time, apparently wrote this about the Edge's divorce with his wife.
Oh.
Which, I don't know, like, that seems weird. That I always find it weird that Paul McCartney wrote Hey Jude about Julian Lennon, just going, oh, I know it's tough, but here's a song. Like, surely let John write that song for his own son? Not,
I mean, is it one of those things that you don't want to be the person writing the song, though? Like, you know, yeah, it's a bit too close. You're going through a divorce. You're like, maybe even, you're like Edge is like, I mean, this feels more like a song Edge might have written than Bono. So maybe Edge is like, I got a lot of thoughts. I'd really love you to get him into song, but I can't have my hands on this at all. You can't even be saying, come on, Edge, sing the blues, play the blues, or none of that nonsense. I got to keep well out of this. When you're playing this, I'm actually going to walk as far away from you on our giant stage as I possibly can and stare off in the other direction. I need to distance myself from this song.
But this was they worked on this in their Berlin sessions, the ill-fated Berlin sessions. So they'd been talking to David Bowie. He said, look, you should go record in Berlin. I had a great time when I was there. And they got there, they didn't have a great time. And they realised this was David Bowie's thinking a wizard was after him, so he kept his piss in the fridge. Like, as if it could have been anywhere. It didn't have to be in Berlin to do that.
And I mean, it's the greatest tourism campaign for Berlin of all time, because people are still going to Berlin based pretty much on David Bowie's recollections of Berlin. He's the original influencer.
And also, Bono tells a very funny story. So they were in Germany during the fall of the Berlin Wall, and he said it was a great celebration. But then at one point he realised that he was around a whole bunch of people who were angry about it. There was very small percentage of people were angry about it. So he was with a whole bunch of dissenters who were kind of protesting the tearing down of the wall, and he had to try and make his way out of there.
This is not a great song. Is my like if everyone's allowed to not like a song on the album, then I'm going to say, like, I find this one the most offensive because it was popular. This is just a good example of U2 being popular. Like, popular enough at the time that they could get a song like this across the line to be a hit. And people still have a great deal of affection for this song, but I think it's... This is Bono phoning it in as far as I'm concerned.
Well, this is their fifth single as well. So even they are going, hey, we've got better songs on this album than this one.
Mm. And the horse song? What about the horse song? The Darryl Braithwaite thing? No. This is our Who's Going to Ride Your Wild Horses.
So that's it, Will. That's the end of side A. Now, I ask this every time. What percent hits would you give the nine songs that we just listened to?
So it's nine. Okay. So
nine songs.
That's great because you've already like made it really hard to do maths out of 100%. Right. That's great. So I don't like Who's Going to Ride Your Wild Horses.
Yep.
And I've got more affection for Alt's wordplay than you do. So I might get that one across the line. The Wendy Matthews song I did not enjoy. So I'm going to say, what's that, about 75% hits. That's not
high.
Bad, actually,
that's
though.
Good.
That's all right. Yeah,
that's good. Hey, thanks for doing this, Will.
Oh, my pleasure.
Now,
thanks, man.
This will be out Thursday, the 4th of August. You've got a show in Melbourne this weekend. Is it sold out?
Oh, I do. No, it's not sold out. It's Sunday night. That's why it's not sold out. So Sunday night, guys, at the Athenaeum, I'm doing the very final time that I'm ever going to do my show, We're Logical, and we are going to tape it as well. So if you'd like to come out and be part of that, Justin Hamilton's doing support. It'll be a really, really fun night. So it's the final time I'm ever doing the show.
Excellent. And all your pods, listen to Will's podcasts.
Where
they go to find them?
Where you find podcasts. Tofop, you know, they're all there. But tofop.com, if you really want to go to our website, they're all there. And James Fosdyke's art and all that stuff is there as well. And the other thing that I was going to say is all the episodes of Gruen from this season that we've just finished are all up on ABC iView. And I did this show with David Wenham called The ABCs Of, where I was interviewed about my life on the ABC, and there is some horrific early footage that I am extremely uncomfortable to watch, and I recommend that people check that out.
I watched the recovery bit. Just so dumb.
Awful. So horribly, horribly. Ironically, I need to be in recovery from the emotions that I still have to this day around that spot.
Hey, thanks everyone for listening to this episode. If you like it, go on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, give it 5 stars. That always helps with the algorithm. Also this Sunday, me and Tommy Daslow are doing our Good Intentions Comedy Room at the Belfry. So it's us two, Kirsty Wiebeck, Dilruk Jayasinghe, Tim Hewitt and Jordan Barr all trying new stuff. It's always fun. Thanks everyone. See you next time. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.